everybody, welcome to F This Movie. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I am joined tonight for a discussion of the 2013 remake of Evil Dead by one person who's evil, JB.
I'll swallow your soul.
And one person who's dead, Adam Risky.
This podcast will get me off heroin.
You can visit our website at fthismovie.net. You can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/fthismovie. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/fthismovie. And email us anytime you want at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com.
Speaking of heroin.
Yeah.
Want some?
I would love some.
No. Are we going to go for a while without spoilers?
Yes.
Okay, because there's something I really need to talk about that is amazing.
If you haven't seen Evil Dead yet, that's okay. It just came out this weekend. We just saw it like an hour ago, and we're going to try and talk about it while it's fresh in our minds, because by tomorrow we will have forgotten it. So go ahead and listen for a while, because we will not be spoiling it. I guess there are some things to spoil, even though it's a remake of a movie that you have seen.
And the movie itself was spoiled for me, because someone's hand kept touching my leg.
It was mine! I thought it was one of those disembodied hands.
I'll swallow your hand.
Before we talk about Evil Dead, J-Bones, have you seen anything good lately?
I believe I've seen something that the two of you have also seen.
Was it Evil Dead?
Well, that, an hour ago. And then more than 1 hour ago, this weekend, we all enjoyed Jurassic Park in 3D.
Yes. That was it? That's all you got to say? What was your favorite 3D moment?
During the car in the tree sequence, there is a shot where we're at the top of the tree looking down through the foliage at Sam Neill, who's at the bottom, who's already, he hasn't gone back for Timmy. And I thought that shot was incredible, and not one of these jump out at you things, but incredible depth that they added to that shot.
What was your favorite 3D moment? Was it 3D Dernbutt?
I loved 3D Dernbutt.
3D Dern.
I saw 3D Sam Neill butt at one point, where it was the part with the where they were looking up at the brachiosauruses.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, they weren't shooting this movie with 3D in mind, right. So there's a few spots with odd blocking that kind of jumped out at me. But for real, though, the part where the ceiling tile drops out and then the raptor jumps up to it, that almost justifies it being converted into 3D.
When I saw that shot, and a few minutes before it came on, I was anticipating it because I could tell that I was seeing it with an audience who either had never seen it or hadn't seen it in a long time, including my wife, who hadn't seen it in so long that she was still jumping at things that I knew were coming. But that shot in particular was the one that stuck out to me as that somebody saw that shot and then said, oh, let's put it in 3D, because that'll be neat, that was the scene that made them think to put it in 3D.
And that made me jump, but then later when I was discussing it with my son, he said, but that made you jump in 2D.
Exactly. In 2D.
It made you jump 2D. 2 days after you see the film, you remember. It's such a good film that the memory is fresh 2 days later.
It was fun to see it with an audience who, like I said, maybe hadn't seen it. Some people brought kids who were way too young for it. I keep giving 3D a chance. And I had to go see it in 3D because that was the only way to see it in IMAX. I wish they would have just re-released it in IMAX and not 3D. Had they not up-converted it to 3D, could they still re-release this movie and make money with it?
I think they can, although they obviously don't think they can, because at the theater that we frequent, the one flat screening, there's one a day, at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It's almost like Hollywood is being fooled by the imaginary 3D bandwagon, and they can't see the forest for the trees. There is money to be made re-releasing classic films to real movie theaters, not just repertory houses. If you did it right and you did it well, and maybe you had a value added like IMAX, but not the 3D gimmick.
But when they re-released Raiders from the Lost Ark, earlier this year in IMAX, or fake IMAX, I don't think it made money.
Yeah, and I looked on one of the websites that tracks box office, and the Jurassic Park movie was number 4 for the weekend, and it's doing okay, but it made less on its opening day than Star Wars Episode 1 3D re-released, which is obviously the trend is dying.
Right. So, I just feel like it costs so much to do the 3D conversion process that if they saved that money and maybe lost a little bit of it on the back end by not, you know, making their money on the upcharge or whatever and just re-released it in IMAX or whatever, I have to think there's money there. But
then maybe what not. I mean is, I would like to see more classic
films. Me too. Oh, me too. Absolutely.
In real movie theaters, and that's certainly not a trend with
but
everyone.
Maybe people stay home thinking, well, I could just watch this at home. Like, clearly that's not the same thing, right?
No.
But the 3D, they can't just watch at home, although now they can because Jurassic Park 3D is out on Blu-ray.
Yep.
I don't know. I didn't love the 3D, but man, that's a good movie.
Yeah, I have no other opinion about it. It's not like I've ever written.
If you haven't read Adam's column on Jurassic Park, you should. It's
exhaustive.
His appreciation
of it. It's fantastic.
But that's the other thing I was thinking.
I still laugh thinking about it. This is the park, baby.
Beyond the 3D.
This is park, yo.
This is park, yo.
That I sat there Saturday morning and just marveling at what a fun movie it is and what a great filmmaker Steven Spielberg is. And I think most modern movies pale in comparison, and I was just really digging on 1993.
My goodness, does he make it look easy in that movie. Like, he's, you know, directed great movies, but there always seems to be more effort involved. At least it looks like on the screen, maybe because they're more stylized or whatever. But let me ask you guys this, because my wife asked this when the movie, I think, ended. Since Jurassic Park came out 20 years ago, has there been another Jurassic Park? And by that I mean a movie that is a blockbuster, that works for young people and old people and works in sort of the same way. That's thrilling and exciting and fun and scary and funny and has really great characters and, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The blockbuster model has changed so much that has there been another
movie? The
first
thing that comes
compare?
To mind is the Star Wars prequels, which obviously made a lot of money, but are not good,
right,
and do not have staying power,
right,
of any sort. So I just mean in terms of anticipation, there was a lot of anticipation for Jurassic Park, and it's sort of the movie that everybody felt that they had to see. But at that point, the comparison breaks down completely.
I think Independence Day could have been one. Maybe the first Spider-Man could have been one.
Okay.
Where it was wildly popular, but you know, people kept going back to it because they liked it.
Yeah.
It wasn't just something you felt like out of obligation because it was the big event movie of the week to go to.
Sure.
So, but, yeah, I mean, neither one of those, I think, was universally liked like Jurassic Park was.
Yeah.
There was kind of a zeitgeist buzz to it, and you don't get that in summer movies all that often anymore.
I still remember when my wife and I went to see it. I believe we went to opening weekend. And we didn't take our son because we knew that he wasn't old enough. Halfway through the film, I grabbed my wife's arm. I was startled by something. And I leaned over and I whispered, "I'm really glad that velociraptors aren't around anymore."
Again,
that's how much I like the movie.
A really great screenplay, you know, sets stuff up in the beginning and pays stuff off at the end. And we've talked about that before. And not the last time I watched Die Hard, but maybe two times ago, I was marveling at the way that screenplay sets things up.
The carpentry of it.
And Jurassic Park does that. And the way that they talk about the velociraptors in a way that you don't necessarily pay attention to it, where he's explaining to the little kid, here's what they do, and here's why they're the scariest thing in the world.
And in an hour, that's going to really pay off.
Exactly. Yeah. Or, of course, the one that everybody points to, which is the amazing Mr. DNA cartoon that takes you through all this exposition in such a clever way.
But then the frog thing pays off, too.
Right. There's all these things. And it has these characters that, like, oh, these people are different. And there are things that you can talk about them. There's things that you can identify about them. And even, like, Independence Day, which I totally agree, the way that movie was kind of a sensation, like, that screenplay is pretty dumb. And I don't feel like the Jurassic Park screenplay is dumb.
Speaking of foreshadowing, we'll get to this in a second. Evil Dead, the remake, has one of the most ludicrous examples of foreshadowing I've ever seen. And I can't even believe it occurred to me at the end of the movie. is this why they made mention of this? I'll get to it when we get to spoilers.
Okay.
I got a real quick couple tidbits about one Independence Day, one Jurassic Park.
All right.
Independence Day one is, they're doing two sequels to it, supposedly, because why do one sequel when you can do two sequels? But I heard that, when I heard that they were making it, they have to have something in the second movie where when they say, oh no, aliens are back, they're going to attack us and kill us, somebody has to say, can we try what we tried the last time and see if that works again? Like, where they go up into space and try to, maybe their computer software didn't get better. That's it. So that's just one thought. They have to say that.
They're still in the original Windows.
They have to say that.
It's their Achilles heel.
And then the big takeaway I had with Jurassic Park this time was I got to see the movie in the theater with my friend John, who I've been friends with since high school, and we were big Jurassic Park fans in high school and since then. And we have a standing bet that whoever dies first gets to get lowered into the ground to the theme for Jurassic Park. So it's a bet neither of us wants
theme?
To. It's the end
the
credits theme.
Theme?
Yeah, okay. So it's the end credits theme.
Got it. Not the bum 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 bum.
No,
no, it's the sweeping one.
It's the sweeping one.
So
you know,
I'm so glad he's dead.
And I am still alive. I am the survivor. I am still alive.
Here he comes, he's evil.
You might want to rethink burying your friend.
Anything besides Jurassic Park 3D? We just did a podcast, so if there's not, that's totally fine.
I finally saw Oz, tremendously disappointing, and everything you said about that on the podcast was correct, sir, and I saw Admission, and I have an admission. Why did Tina Fey win the Mark Twain Prize for humor? It certainly wasn't for her movie work.
Because she's sleeping with Hal Holbrook.
Every summer she makes a movie. Does she see movies as like slumming because the money's in TV?
I don't know.
Has she ever made a good movie?
I saw the trailer for Admission, and on paper, I like Tina Fey, and I like Paul Rudd, but I saw the trailer, and I was like, I feel like I already know exactly how I feel about that movie without seeing it.
Every beat. The movie should be called Laziness.
So many times in the trailer, too, she says, like, I'm an admissions counselor. It's like, are the people who do that job really defined by it to the extent that her character appears to be in that movie? No. I don't know. I'm sorry I didn't see it.
And the spaghetti western at the patio last night.
If you meet Sartana, pray for your death?
Yeah.
How is it?
It's weird.
Yeah.
Although, I did want to give a plug to the Chicago Cinephile Society,
Chicago Film Society.
I did it again, which I confused with the Northwest Chicago.
Right, no.
And you know what I compare
warring factions.
In Life of Brian, there's the Judean People's Front, there's the Popular Front.
They're doing some great stuff, though. I'm
Northwest Chicago Film Society is at the Portage on Wednesday nights.
Right.
The Chicago
Film Society.
Film Society is at the patio.
Yes.
And Jason Cullum, who's a friend, I just can't get anything right.
It's okay.
He's one of the people behind it.
Yes.
I'm glad I saw it. It was very interesting. It's certainly obscure. Klaus Kinski's in it.
Yeah.
And they spell his name wrong in the credits.
Well, they're Italian.
But it was very late.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe I dreamt it.
Adam, anything for you besides JP, three Dern?
Yeah, three a Dern. I saw one really good movie in theaters, and I saw a
Evil
couple...
Evil Dead. Okay, what else?
Oh, get lost! Steal my thunder! So I saw The Place Beyond the Pines this morning.
Okay.
And it's really good.
Okay.
It's really, really good. It's strange that nobody's brought up in the reviews for it, that it almost works as like an anthology. So you've got like a bandit part, you've got like a cop part, and you've got like a high school...
Crazy caper comedy.
Angst. Yeah, I love capers.
Mm-hmm. We saw the trailer in front of No about a week ago, and I just thought it looked so interesting. You said the anthology. It looked like it was a television miniseries.
Yeah.
How are they going to make all this work?
It's really good. It takes its time. I would avoid, like, any critic that is saying, oh, it's Godfather-esque, because that's way too much pressure to be putting on this movie. So if you're just expecting something to be good and not to change your life, you'll enjoy it.
The reviews have been not great on it.
Yeah, it's strange. They're being way too hard on the third act.
Okay.
And then something strange happened when I went to go see it. I go to buy my ticket, and the guy goes, would you like a soundtrack? And I said...
Is it free?
I said, this was my knee-jerk reaction. I'm like, oh, no, no! And he goes, and then I was like, is it free? And he says, yes. And he took out A Place Beyond the Pines soundtrack for me. It's good that he did that, because it made me notice the music in the movie, and it's very good.
Okay.
It's not something I would listen to after the movie, outside of the movie, but it's very good. And then I did some little research on it when I got home, and it's composed by Mike Patton, who is the lead singer of Faith No More.
No kidding.
And it's good, and there's...
That's fascinating. Now I want to see the movie just for that.
Yeah, it's a good movie. The performances are good. It's better than Blue Valentine, which I liked but didn't love. And I need to ask you guys about Ryan Gosling and what your feelings are about him, because every time I see him in the trailer for a movie, I'm like, oh no, not that James Dean shit again. That I'm too cool for school, yeah. Like Blue Steel stare. And yeah. Then I see him in the movie in the context of it, and he's great.
And Doug commented on this last Friday.
Yeah.
But he doesn't always play the drive character, because in parts of Blue Valentine, mm-hmm. the present day parts, he's sad and
right.
awful.
Yeah.
And then in Half Nelson, he's certainly not.
I think Doug is referring mostly to post-Drive, because he had Drive and then Place Beyond the Pines and Gangster Squad.
Or Lars and the Real Girl.
No, it's weird back in the day, he didn't used to do these parts.
It's weird, though, because I forget about those almost all the time whenever I think of Ryan Gosling. Yeah. I always think of...
The Notebook. I know.
I love The Notebook. I think of Drive.
He's
so
old and dead.
I know. Oh, he built her a house! And then I think of Drive, and I think of Crazy Stupid Love, where he's the guy always in control, the coolest guy in the room, and I'm just really tired of that bit.
But those scenes he has with Emma Stone in the middle of that movie,
they're the best parts of
that
movie.
Were, like, improvised, apparently. Yeah, those were the only scenes in that
Crazy
movie
Stupid
that I liked.
Love?
Yeah.
He's only the cool guy, because it's a town with only one nightclub. I forgot he was in that.
Yeah.
I think he's a great actor.
Yeah.
He's good.
Yeah. And then...
How's B-Coops?
B-Coops? Yeah. Okay, I got a quote about why the director hired B-Coops.
Okay.
I've turned around on B-Coops because of, you know, SLP, which I promise never to talk about on the show again, because I've talked about it too much.
It's a wise promise.
I'm just done with that. I love it. Me and John Murphy love it, but we're done. Okay. So the director... Derek C. in France, I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing his name, he said that he hired Bradley Cooper and he wrote the part specifically for him because he wanted to have that role played by a guy who's paraded around as a hero but inside feels corrupted. And that's how he felt about Bradley Cooper.
Interesting.
Where he's this, like, playboy that is just walking around being like, hey, look at me, I'm the hangover guy, but inside feels, like, rotten to the core. That is not who he is.
Wow.
And I thought that was great. And he's good in it. He's turned a corner in his career.
I was curious to see, because this is his first post-Oscar nomination, post-SLP role. Obviously, he shot it, you know, already, but it's like that this could either be the turning point. This is the one where it's going to... Was that a fluke, or is he this new actor?
I think he needs to
succeed in this, I think, because now he's doing... fucking Hangover 3, which I'm instituting a rule based on something that Adam told me. Somebody at work saw the trailer. Somebody at Adam's work saw the trailer for Hangover 3, and what was his question to you?
I want to
say it's like, Risky, see that fucking Hangover 3 trailer? So now, anytime we talk about fucking Hangover 3, we can only call it fucking Hangover 3.
When I saw Spring Breakers, they had a preview for Hangover 3
fucking
beforehand.
Fucking Hangover 3.
And this guy in the theater who is a teenager, he just goes, fuck yeah! right at the beginning of the trailer, he's like, fuck yeah!
God, what is it with that series?
Well, could I amend it and say from now on, it's gotta be... Fucking Hangover 3. Yeah. Fuck yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Better.
Almost, almost like that's the part after the colon that signifies that it's the sequel.
Even better.
How about fucking Hangover 3, colon, fuck yeah, after the colon?
I'm anticipating, quite seriously, the return of the wet, hot American summer Bradley Cooper.
Yeah.
That's the one I'd like to see.
Oh, yeah. Man. Yeah. No, I,
gay sex is what you're looking for in his...
Well, I was being subtle about it.
He's the opposite side of the coin of the James Franco debate that you had, where he's a great character actor but not a leading man. I think Bradley Cooper is maybe not interesting enough to be a character actor, but I think he's a solid anchor to a movie. And I think he could be a leading man if he just... Because he just plays it straight and plays Beyond the Pines. He's not trying to do too much. He's just playing it straight.
So. I got to say, I mean, the first Hangover has turned into like a sore spot with me just because of the cult that has built up around it. I didn't hate the first movie. And Bradley Cooper actually gave my favorite performance in that movie because he was such... He was so good at playing a douche, I thought, and who hinted at a dark side. And they never quite went that direction in that movie, but... He gave my favorite performance in that movie. The only movie I'll talk about, I guess, was there... You saw something else.
I'll cut you off.
I'm sorry.
Oh, no problem. So, have you guys ever seen Bed of Roses with Christian Slater?
I sure have.
Okay. What did you think of Bed of Roses?
I truly do not remember it. I want to say, I rented
it... I am nodding my head no.
Back when it was like, when you could go to like Video Update and get four movies for $1 or something, like every Tuesday. Or they were 50 cents. So I rented it, and I think for like the first 20 or 30 minutes, I didn't hate it, and I remember thinking, wow, they don't usually do just straightforward romance movies, sort of targeted at adults, right? And then I don't think I liked it, and I haven't thought of it since.
Okay, well, it's on my Christian Slater double feature DVD with Pump Up the Volume, which is a classic.
That justifies its existence.
And
Pump Up the Volume is coming as an unsung column.
Nice!
It is.
High five.
It's on the list.
Did you hear that?
And I don't mean to cut you off.
No problem.
But there are only three movies ever made that get high school right.
Mm-hmm.
I am a high school teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of them.
It's a great movie.
Yeah.
And Bed of Roses is not as good as Pump Up the Volume, but I had the opposite reaction to you because I was watching it and enjoying the hell out of it, ironically, for the first 20 minutes because it's deranged.
Yeah.
And it's like thoughts and viewpoints about romance and relationships, and he's stalking her, and she's like a workaholic, and it's just a mess. And so there's like he. To show he's sensitive, he goes to, like, children's story times, and, like, she sees him at the children's story time, and she goes, why do you go to story times? And he's like, there's just
something. Because I have a baboon heart.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. She's like, you have an untamed heart, and he's like, you're some kind of wonderful. No. So.
He gives her the earrings.
He's like, bright green tomatoes, so
bright. He's like, you look good wearing my future. All right, sorry.
And, yeah, and there's just deranged stuff. Like, he goes to story time, and she's like, why do you go to story time? And he's like, sometimes it's just good to hear a story out loud. And then she's just like, have you been to many story times? And he's like, not recently. And it's just great. But then it broke through my irony shield, and I actually just genuinely liked it. And it was really weird. And I'm single, and I just kind of want to see romance stuff every once in a while. I'm on a lot of bad dates, and sometimes I just want to see it work out.
Consider going to some children's story times. I hear they're a hotbed of activity.
Consider getting a baboon heart.
I got arrested on both counts. Tried them both.
All right, let's just talk
Evil
about
Evil Dead.
Let's talk about Evil Dead. Remember, spoiler free for a little while. Go ahead. We'll each give our thoughts on the movie. Go ahead.
It's so bad.
Okay.
It's so bad. Before we turned the machine on, we were talking about Roger Ebert's autobiography, and we're very, very sad that Roger passed away. I think Roger touched more lives in all sorts of different ways that he ever could have possibly imagined, and I'm not trying to make fun of him. But Patrick has said this on many occasions, that the problem with the autobiography is that it doesn't often touch on the reason that you're there, the reason you bought the book, the reason you borrowed the book. You would like to hear him talk about his job as a film critic, and there's a lot of material about Urbana. In approaching a remake of one of the more famous horror films of, you know, the last 30 years, it seems odd to me that what they would add are things that are completely beside the point. What this film brings to the party is backstory. bewildering personal details about the characters, because I watched the original this morning because I couldn't remember parts of it. And one thing about the original is those five people are ciphers. We barely know all of their names, much less,
right.
Okay, you're the nurse and you had a heroin addiction and you skated on your family. Is this something that the modern audience needs to make them real people? It's certainly not something we need to scare us, because I assume that that's what the purpose of a horror film was. I just thought it gets in the way. I hated it. I thought it was one of the worst films I've seen in a while. It's been unseasonably cold where we live, and when we walked out of the theater, it was warm, and it made me wish that I had cleaned my garage instead of seeing this movie.
Adam?
I took the opposite tact that JB did. I purposely didn't watch...
clean your garage.
I did, well, yeah.
That's
a euphemism.
That's where you have it over me.
Bro. Yeah. The garage is my butt. So I did not watch Evil Dead for a long time because I knew I was going to be watching the remake, and I didn't want the remake to have to live up to the original, which is a movie I admittedly do not love. I think it's fine, but there's a lot of ugliness in it, and the tree rape thing, which is back in the remake, is unnecessary and hateful, and it takes me out of a movie.
I got to tell you this, because I watched it again this morning. I don't mean to interrupt you.
No.
I hate that scene, and I think it speaks to how old they were when they made it.
Sam Raimi has said that. He says, I would take that out if I could, but we were young and trying to shock people.
These are some boys who have some things that they haven't worked out yet. Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting that when the tree rape shows up in Evil Dead 2, it's more presented as she's pulled through the woods and it becomes another shaky cam sequence where it's like a roller coaster. I got to the theater way too early. Way too early. Mm-hmm. And I was bored. So I wandered into the theater that was showing it an hour before our show, just to see a couple minutes of it, see how crowded the theater was. And I walked in, and guess what scene I walked in on?
The rape.
The tree rape. And I said, oh, they're doing this again, huh? Oh, boy.
Yeah, I mean, so the remake is not as good as the first Evil Dead. I'm not a big fan of the first Evil Dead. I really like Evil Dead 2. I really like Army of Darkness, but I don't want to talk about those. This one, the remake, it's not horrible. It's kind of okay. I didn't think it was bad.
It's horrible.
I didn't think it was bad, but there's one reason why it's not bad, and that's Jane Levy.
Yeah.
She's the whole show, and she's in a lot of it, and she's really committed and good, and I haven't seen her in Suburgatory. I haven't seen her in, you know, Fun Size. I've only seen her feet on Google.
And Jane Levy plays Mia.
Correct.
She plays Mia, yeah. And, I mean, like, I think she could be, like, a pretty big star, but the thing that was driving me crazy was I'm watching this, and I'm like, I want to see her in any movie other than Evil Dead right now.
Yeah. I didn't really like the movie either. I don't think I hated it as much as you, JB. I will totally agree that Jane Levy was the only thing that I really liked about it, and she gives a pretty good performance in a movie with, I don't think I'm exaggerating when I say some of the worst performances I've ever seen in a major Hollywood movie. The problem with remakes is they really kind of test my cynicism, because I go into every movie wanting to like it. I try and be open-minded going into every single movie. And okay, let's see, you know, I really hope this works. And of course, I sat down for this, and JB, right before it started, turned to us and said, we want to like this, right? I said, yeah, I want to like every movie I see. But with remakes, you're up against something, and you're constantly kind of comparing it. And so it's like you want to... When you go into most movies, you have this, I'm trying to process this, it's a blank slate. It's like, okay, show me whatever. When you go into a remake, it's like, okay, fucker, prove to me why you exist. Prove to me why this should be a thing. And I tried again and again not to be in that mindset. in the remake of Evil Dead. But I am a big fan of the original Evil Dead, and so I kept slipping into, but the original is so much better. And part of the reason for that is this movie does a thing that a lot of remakes do. I commented on this last summer, I think, when I saw the horrible remake of Total Recall, which just keeps throwing in references to the old Total Recall to remind you, remember this other better thing that you wish you were watching right now? And the remake of Evil Dead keeps doing that. Like, be your own thing. So I don't mind so much the addition of the backstory. While I don't, I agree that it didn't really add anything to the movie. It's at least one area where they're saying, okay, here's something a little bit different we could do. Because in theory, trying to humanize the characters or giving them more of a backstory makes us care about them, right? The more we know about them and understand their relationships, the more we theoretically care about them. The problem with the Evil Dead remake is they're still all kind of boring and reprehensible, so we don't care about them. I kind of liked the drug addiction thing.
I liked it too.
I thought for at least half the movie, it's trying to sort of be this metaphor for this, that demonic possession is this metaphor for drug addiction.
And I didn't hate it, but I just kept thinking, well, this is Nightmare on 34,000 Feet, where they've given us another reason that the voice of reason will not be listened to. I'm watching the film and I'm thinking, after Cabin in the Woods, how could you make this?
Yeah.
And I kept waiting for Bradley Cooper and Richard Jenkins to show up.
Bradley Whitford.
I'm sorry, Bradley Whitford.
No, you meant what you said.
But here's what I meant. I don't just mean the incredible, crazy details we get about these people's lives, after which we don't care about them more than the characters in the original, but in much the same way that we were talking at the end of the film, that this sort of interesting title sequence with the dripping blood is put at the end of the movie because no one will sit through that at the beginning. I'm also talking about the unnecessary backstory of the prologue that they've added, where modern audiences will not sit through a movie unless there's some bing, bang, boom.
Because it opens, right in the first 10 minutes. It opens with the shots from The Shining after the prologue and the credit, Evil Dead, and then it's basically the opening shots from The Shining. And I thought to myself, well, why didn't they open the movie with this? Because then they couldn't call back to it later and literally show you the thing that...
Well, that was... At one point, we see this pole. And if you've been paying attention and haven't fallen asleep, you know what that pole is. But you and I both laughed when they did this. There's the little flash cut to what we saw 20 minutes ago.
You have to be reminded that they don't respect your intelligence.
And I tried to give this film a fair viewing.
Yeah.
But in the first 5 minutes, we see the Book of the Dead open. And someone has written motherfucker inside of it. And I think it was at that point that I said, I'm not going to like this.
In crayon, I think.
I think it's human blood.
Oh, or crayon.
I'm just trying to understand why, right? Like, the best remakes are ones that sort of justify their own existence. So John Carpenter decides to remake The Thing, and he kind of goes back to this original story. And it's a completely different movie, whereas instead of this external monster, it's this weird inside threat.
He brings something to the party.
Right. The remake of The Fly is a different take on the material. You know, we saw the trailer for Carrie, the Kimberly Pierce remake, before the movie. And not only does Chloe Moretz appear spectacularly miscast, but it looks like, instead of maybe going back to the Stephen King story and trying to be faithful to that, which is what every new remake says, like, no, we went back to the original source, they appear to have just remade the Brian De Palma movie. And the trailer is cut together in such a way where I guess it assumes you've seen the original Carrie, because it tells you every single thing. So who is this movie for? Because the only people I would think it would be for would be people who haven't seen Carrie. But now the trailer has spoiled everything.
The trailer shows it's for the three of us.
Why?
The Carrie remake?
Yeah.
Oh, I disagree.
Why?
Because, A, it assumes that you've seen the original.
Right.
That because of your affection for the original, you might be suckered into going to see it, but... Or maybe Julianna Moore fans. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I just
have you seen the original Carrie recently?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like scarier than I ever remembered it being.
It's super good. Every time I watch it, I like that movie.
But like we were talking about on the Planet of the Apes podcast, for years I've thought Carrie's ripe for a remake because people cannot deal with the hairstyles and the fashions of that movie.
And because bullying is such a thing now, I think there's a way to approach that material that could make it feel contemporary. They appear to have just remade the Brian De Palma movie. I haven't seen it. I'm just basing this on the trailer. So we get to Evil Dead, and it's, why are you remaking this?
Because it's a property that can be exploited.
Right. And so apparently it's just for people who have never seen the Sam Raimi one. But once again, we get nonstop references to the Sam Raimi movies.
No, but I think the marketing strategy, it goes back to Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet.
It always does.
So many things do. The marketing genius is, we're going to get the kids because we've updated it. And there's Leonardo DiCaprio and Claire Danes. And we're going to sucker old people into seeing it who love Shakespeare. And in the words of Patton Oswalt, it satisfies no one. because I think they've done the same thing. I mean, it's not coincidental that Bruce Campbell is doing a lot of promotion for this film.
But they're going to get horror audiences no matter what, because horror audiences go to any horror movie. So they need to bring in outside people. And I don't understand who it's for, and it begs the question, and this isn't enough analysis about Evil Dead, we'll get to actual analysis of the movie. Is it possible to remake a movie that you love? Could you remake a movie that you love?
Personally?
Yeah.
No.
Right.
No.
But it's possible, because as you yourself said, Carpenter loves Howard Hawks, and Carpenter loves The Thing. The Thing is playing on the TV in the background of Halloween. He did it.
I was hoping that, and I'll be discreet because it kind of dances on spoiler territory, but I was really hoping that this would, because they have the heroin angle in it, and that's established in really early on, like the first 10 minutes, that Jane Levy's character is addicted to heroin, and the reason why they are out at the cabin is to do a cold turkey intervention for her. And I was secretly hoping that this was just some kind of a weird directorial sucker punch personal statement about a guy who has some experience with a drug addiction or like somebody who's had a drug addiction. And this was all going to be a smack hallucination. Okay. And I was really hoping that they would take some kind of weird angle like that. And even if it was just the whole, like, it was all a dream ending, it's like, well, at least that was different.
That would match the film that we saw. Because there are some things that happen in the last half hour, as you famously said about Silver Linings Playbook. I kept waiting for that.
Yeah.
And I can't talk about it yet because we're not in spoilers, but
the drug addiction stuff, I think, and I don't know this for sure. When they first were talking about remaking the movie, Diablo Cody's name was all over it, that she was going to be the one writing it.
Yeah.
And her name is not in the credits, but I think she still had something to do with writing it. So either she did an early draft and then they took that away and rewrote it. That has to be what happened, because I think her whole thing was that it was about this girl who was addicted, and that's why they were at the cabin, to get her off drugs and whatever. And it seems like some other writers came on and got rid of most of that, because while we've talked about, like, yeah, that's kind of an interesting idea, it's basically dismissed pretty early on.
Yeah.
Like, they don't follow through on it at all.
One thing that I also thought was, and I don't know, I'm kind of nominating this for a potential glossary item.
Oh, all right.
Okay. I would like to call Evil Dead an example, the Evil Dead remake an example of off the rails sponsored by McDonald's, which is, you've got a movie that's doing a lot of crazy shit, and it wants you to think it's off the rails, but it's still kind of safe. And for a movie as gory and crazy as the Evil Dead remake is, it's crazy in what it's showing you, sort of, but it's not crazy in any thought behind it,
right.
So it doesn't feel crazy. And I think a movie like the original Evil Dead, directed by Raimi, was the work of guys who are something's a little off with them. And you don't ever feel like that with the remake. You feel like it's something that's very carefully
packaged.
This
is one of the most boring, violent films I've ever seen.
No, I agree with that there's a lot of frantic work and loud noises and crazy amounts of gore. Clearly you can't get an X rating for violence in America. And I thought the same thing. Like, this feels boring. But to your point, Adam, the tree rape sequence, and I don't want to spoil too much about the tree rape if that's why you guys are going to the remake, is a perfect example of that, because in the original movie, like you said, it's off-putting and it's ugly, but it feels like when you get to that point, you're like, oh, this movie feels dangerous. These guys will do anything. Mm-hmm. This is crazy. And in this movie, there's nothing behind it. It's weirdly indifferent towards that moment, and it's there just because it had been done in an earlier movie. And somehow there's something even more disturbing, I think, about that, the lack of intent and purpose behind it is more disturbing to me than what Sam Raimi did in the original.
And also, I think it's more disturbing, too, because, all right, there's all this talk about how the first Evil Dead by Raimi was like this video nasty. It was like this movie that was in limited release, and I wasn't really cognitive of what was going on at the time when it was released, but it was just, it didn't seem like it was something that was out in every theater.
Right, right.
And this is out in 2,500, 3,000 screens, and people are watching an indifferent rape sequence, right, and at not being challenged at all, like we're challenging the filmmakers with it right now, about how they feel about that.
Yep.
And it's just, it's this passive, just evilness, no pun intended, but that it really is disgusting to me and bothers me.
And I would argue that the filmmakers even gave themselves an out, because at that point in the film, we still have the vestiges of the heroin plot line. Hmm. And I would argue that we see this horrible, ugly sequence, and oh, look, we can use CGI and make it look different. When they come upon her, she's in a fetal position laying in the woods and looks very different. And I thought at that point, they were either suggesting or giving themselves the out that it was a nightmare, that it didn't really happen.
Yep.
You mentioned CGI, so I will say a couple things in praise of the movie. I didn't hate the movie, but again, I didn't particularly like it, and to me it just felt like another unnecessary remake where somebody watched the original and thought, hey, it doesn't look enough like an MTV video, so let's gorgeously backlight everything and make every shot look kind of like a painting. Like, no, it's...
And one of the things I noticed about the original this morning, it's on Netflix, is... they did so much of the night in the original, night for night.
Mm-hmm.
So you get this horrible student film night lighting. Mm-hmm. In fact, there's one shot at the end. And here I have to say that when I watch the original, it's permanently mixed up by reading Bill Warren's book, The Evil Dead Companion, where he details how grueling and awful that shoot was. That there's a shot of the cabin, and you can actually see the two lights on the roof of the cabin. And it's like, we've been up for 4 days, and we have to get this shot, and there's two arc lights on it. But so much of the lighting in the original Evil Dead is interesting because, again, they actually took the time and the effort to shoot it night for night. The other thing I think is, even if you know this or not, when you watch the first one, it's a bunch of kids trying really hard to make a movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But again, the cheapness of it, the energy behind it, even sort of the amateurish acting, it's all part of a piece that works because the aesthetic matters, and that's what this movie doesn't quite understand, and it goes back to the fucking Platinum Dunes remake of Texas Chainsaw, that they saw the original Texas Chainsaw, which you watch and feels grimy and sweaty and dangerous, like I'm watching a snuff movie, and they said, no, let's make it look like a music video and make it gorgeous. No, that strips away a lot of its power, and this movie kind of does the same thing. By stripping away so much of the aesthetic of the original, it loses a lot of that feeling of, ah, gosh, what am I watching? So they try and compensate by going crazy with the gore.
And I think it's ironic that while the makers of the remake could justifiably, it's got quotation marks around it, well, we use CGI, and our tree rape was better than theirs. Yeah. Oh, there's a calling card. But all of the shaky cam stuff in the woods, you know, that's probably one of the more famous things from the original. They weren't able to improve on that.
No, it's the same. They could have just used Sam Raimi stuff. I thought the gore, for as excessive as it was and for as sort of indifferent as I felt towards a lot of it, although there are certainly a few things that I winced, was very well done, if you can praise a movie for how, you know, its violence. And I thought most of it appeared to be practical, which is going out of fashion. I didn't see a lot of CGI blood and stuff.
There was one shot that I thought.
So I appreciated that.
Yeah, they were in a lot of the pre-release interviews, Bruce Campbell would endlessly talk. Yeah, Bruce Campbell, I used to really like him, but he needs to stop talking. He just needs to be an actor, not a promoter anymore. But, they were really talking up about how they didn't use CGI, they used practical effects, so apparently they really burned a girl alive. it works to the movie's benefit, I think, for the most part.
Yeah.
But, it's just not anything. You just become numb to it.
And that's the perfect transition. Can we get into spoilers now, please?
Sure.
Not yet?
Can I just say, I'll say one thing before spoilers. Yeah. If you're staging an intervention for your friend in a remote, desolate location, bring board games, magazines, anything. They didn't bring anything.
No, they didn't seem prepared, really.
At one point, the nurse character...
some meat.
Yeah.
At one point, the nurse character...
a carving knife.
May I? At one point, the nurse character says, I'm doing everything that would actually happen at an intervention in a hospital.
Yeah, both you and I laughed out loud.
And I was sitting in the theater, and I was saying, except for the hygienic part.
Right.
Yeah. You're in a cabin with... You obviously don't want to talk about spoilers.
No, I do. I do. I want to go back to something you said about the violence real quick, because it's weird. Here's this crazy level of violence, and like you said, you end up kind of indifferent towards it, and that's because there's sort of two ways you can approach the intensity of the violence in this movie. You can do Devil's Rejects, Rob Zombie approach, which is, this is ugly and awful to see.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can do what Sam Raimi basically invented and Peter Jackson did, which is, isn't this fun? And this is silly and crazy and so far over the top that it becomes kind of comical. And the movie walks the line between them, so it's neither fun nor disturbing. It's just kind of there.
Can I talk about Devil's Rejects for just a second?
Of course.
One thing that I think is brilliant about that movie is, for the first hour or so, it's very much like Rob Zombie's kind of the opinion of, I still like these House of the Thousand Corpses characters. They're my guys. They're my gang. They're my little, you know, guys that I can make action figures of and sell at conventions. And then they have that awful, like, hotel abduction.
Yeah.
And it's basically like Rob Zombie telling you, no, I'm an artist, and you should be fucking embarrassed that you are reveling in this. These people are horrible.
Yeah.
And the rest of the movie follows suit with that. And that's the thing that's so distressing about, like, Evil Dead Remake, is there's no point of view. So you've got this guy, Fede Alvarez, who directed it, who they keep talking up, this fucking Fede Alvarez guy. They're just like, like, I'm going to do my Bruce Campbell impression.
All right,
Bruce Campbell's all like, he's like, Sam and I, we were talking to this guy named Fetty, and he's from Uruguay, and, you know, he's just a fan of Evil Dead, and we were talking about him, and then he had this video, and it's like a sensation on the internet, you know, the kids with the blogs on the internet, and they love it, and then we watched it, and we're just like, oh, wow, you know, let's do Evil Dead, and it's just... There's no fucking point of view. It's just, like, destruction for the sake of destruction.
He's a video director.
He does those, like, short movies you would see at a Music Box Massacre.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because he seems like a guy who knows visuals but who has nothing to say. And that's kind of what this movie is a lot of visuals and nothing to say. The last thing I'll say that I liked the music. And I thought at times the music was compensating for what was happening, because the music is very bombastic and over the top, and sometimes I thought that it was trying really hard to give sort of this heightened emotion that, again, Sam Raimi does really well in the original movies, and that could have worked in this movie, but again, a lot of the problem is that the music is trying to compensate for really dead performances, dead in the good way that the movie wants to be dead. I mean, like, lifeless, like in the good way. I'm sorry.
The lead guy in this movie,
his name's
Shiloh Fernandez. He has no reaction to anything in this
movie. And he narrates everything. This is crazy.
Yeah.
I can't do this.
He has no reaction to anything. There's a part where he gets shot in the cheek with, like, a nail gun, and he's got the same expression as he does at the beginning of the movie when he's introducing his girlfriend.
He had to have won a contest.
This morning, contest winner. This morning, I watched the original, and I thought the guy who played the character who's not Ash.
Bruce Campbell, right. Blonde guy.
Scotty? Was not very good.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Now...
He won the Harrison Ford lookalike contest.
To be fair, there's one thing in this movie I liked. At one point, they go into a basement where all sorts of nonsense is going on, and there's flies. And I thought the sound design was very effective. Maybe I'm not the only person. That sound I find unnerving. And if you see it in the right theater, there's flies all around you. Now, spoiler alert.
Spoilers for Evil Dead, everybody.
I am not a shrinking violet. I love violence as much as the next guy. I have tried to have a life full of real violence. That's a joke.
Get off me!
But I want to go back to what you said, because I was watching this film, which I largely found soulless.
That's a good word for it.
And at the end, it is raining blood.
Literally, and a character raining blood, everyone.
Pulls off her own hand
yep.
to start a chainsaw
yeah.
and shove it through a naked woman's head, through her mouth.
Yeah.
And we get a long shot in which we see these two characters completely covered in blood, one of them handless, jerking the chainsaw, and the other person's head and body is jerking because they are having a chainsaw put through their head. She cuts the head in two like an apple. It falls. You like this shot. That's
a very vivid description.
Half of the head blinks. This is an R?
Right.
Yeah. But you cannot give head to Michelle Williams. That's an NC-17.
Yeah, right.
Again, I don't have a problem with violence, but I'm watching this, and we don't have a ratings board anymore. And I'm not suggesting, I don't give a shit about ratings. I don't think anyone's going to be turned into a social liability by watching violence. I don't think that at all. But I'm watching what I just described to you. What the hell?
Well, it's, right, you're reacting to the hypocrisy, not the fact that this movie should have an X. Just if this movie has an R, shouldn't other movies that do less also have an R? That finale was one of the only things that I kind of liked about the movie, and you're absolutely right. It's so far over the top, but that was one of the things that I thought, yeah, this is way over the top. Like, mm-hmm.
And that's
be
why
more
I
crazy like
that's,
this.
That's why I thought it was going to be her heroin dream, because I have to mention this. Her hand is trapped under a car. Rather than be killed, she pulls her own hand off, and then, so she won't bleed to death, she puts it under her other arm. At that point, are we supposed to have suspended
disbelief?
Well, you
skipped the part where she basically sticks the chainsaw on her stump, right?
Yeah.
Because we all saw Evil Dead 2, and so multiple hands get taken off in this movie, because that's a thing that the original did.
There's a lot of early shots, too, of the chainsaw, like, oh, it's coming, it's coming. Yeah,
right?
It's really dopey and dumb.
Constant references to the other better movie.
When you were talking about that part where she pulls her hand out and rips it off to get freed from out from under the car, do you guys watch Louie?
Yep.
All right. You know how there's the part where he asks out Parker Posey and she says yes and he does like the fist pump?
Yep.
This movie missed a perfect opportunity for her to do a fistless fist pump.
Wow.
But instead they had to show the bones sticking
out.
Yeah,
she had to say, take this, motherfucker. It's like, no, do a fistless fist pump. That would have been
a lot
cooler.
And I didn't even really know who the lady was that climbed up out of the ground.
She was the woman who got burned alive from
the original Wraith that's been
not very interesting.
Also, like, if this cabin was owned by this girl's family,
yeah,
with her brother and her crazy mom and stuff like that, when did this other family have time to get to this cab? Did they sublet
and
it?
Kill a lot of cats
for the first half hour.
Yeah.
I thought the father figure with the glasses from the beginning of the film was their father, and what we see during the prologue was what happened to either a sibling or their mother. I thought that was going to be the connection.
No, nope, okay. Totally unrelated.
Yeah.
Now, I want to bring this up, because from now on, much like I called the Psycho remake Clouds and Cows, I will now refer to the Evil Dead remake as Knives, Needles, and Nails. And I was watching the original this morning.
A heavy metal band has just taken their name.
Sometimes they play Cabaret Metro. None of them have quit their day jobs. That I was watching Evil Dead, the original and far superior film, for the first time in a really long time, and two things struck me. Number one, as we mentioned before, this is the work of some young men who have some issues to work out about female sexuality. But looking at it through that lens, I thought, has the original film ever been heralded that it's the women who get possessed and largely are victimizing the men. That our cliche from that period in history is the monster is some sort of man who is victimizing the women. Has anyone given Sam Raimi credit for turning it around?
Not that I've heard.
No, I've never heard that.
And I thought, an uneasy feeling about sexuality pervades the movie that we just saw 2 hours ago. That during the tree rape sequence, I don't think it's a mistake that the evil agent comes out of the ghost girl's mouth and into the other girls. And then later she vomits blood. That there's a lot of things with bodily fluids and this being passed like a disease.
Right.
And even more interesting, and maybe this might be the reason it's not as bad as I'm saying, this film has an obsession with penetrating.
Okay. Yeah.
That clearly in movies we see knives being used more than guns, because it's much more frightening to have someone get that close and put something inside of you. But looking at the remake through that lens tonight, this film is obsessed with penetrating the skin.
I thought it was almost as equally as obsessed, though, and I had this thought during the movie, with showing those things being removed. That anytime somebody gets penetrated by something, that in the next scene or shot, we see them slowly pull it out.
Right. And that, in the similar way that the original did, it's interesting that all of the trouble in this film is caused by women. And then we have men trying to extricate themselves. And one way that the remake distinguishes itself is that at the end of the remake we are left with a female character as opposed to a male character. But I also thought that spoke to this new prologue we have, where we are so nervous about female sexuality that we have to punish a girl in the first 10 minutes. And I don't think it's an accident. Again, I haven't worked through this theory completely yet. It's no accident that at many times during the film, the girl indicates her possession by screaming obscenities that have to do with sexual acts.
Mm-hmm. I think we're in this hour giving this movie more thought than anybody who made this movie did.
Which is, you know, one of the upsetting things about the movie is that
I'm trying to find something to think about.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. Because even on Oz, when we were talking about that, I felt like I could talk about it. I feel like I can barely talk about this
because
movie.
Even though Oz was disappointing and kind of dull, we know that it was made by an artist. And I'm not sure that anyone involved with this movie is an artist. They are makers of product.
I was just going to use that word.
And that's what this movie is.
This is 2 hours, and it can be sold to cable, and it can be on these streaming services. And
it will be praised by a lot of horror fans, and that's okay. If people like it, they can, you know, that's fine. But it will be praised for the level of violence, I think.
Can I go back on what I said at the beginning? I'm like, it's not bad. It's kind of, it's okay.
Listen, it happens to all of us.
What was I thinking?
It happens to all of us.
It's really bad.
I'm driving home, and we got to keep, you know, it's sort of ironic because we're talking about Evil Dead. It's soulless. And in the original, one of the things that the creature in the basement with that cellar door, I'll swallow your soul, swallow your soul, that this film has had its soul swallowed. And I think it's ironic that so has Sam Raimi real life, because that's how we get Oz, the Great and Powerful, because that gentleman has lost his soul as well.
And he's producing the remake of Evil Dead, so it's not a good year for Sam Raimi.
Nope.
The nail gun sequence was another thing that, again, I kind of liked just because I appreciated how many nails they shot into the one guy. Again, I was always wanting the movie to go further, not in its violence, but just in its...
Show us something. The minute...
Go crazy!
The minute, though, they show him fixing the door.
Right.
Didn't the two of you say, it's the nail gun in the drawer?
But I really wanted them to also make... Because on more than one occasion, he gets shot with nails. And I actually wanted that to become a running joke, that he just keeps getting shot with nails throughout the movie. Because I wanted the duct tape thing to be a running joke. Twice in the movie, Shiloh Fernandez, somebody gets badly injured, and he puts duct tape on it.
And the second time, it's just...
It's hilarious. And I wanted that to keep going. Just people covered in duct tape and blood.
I've got a theory about the nail gun and why it's the hippie-looking guy that keeps getting shot with the nails.
Yeah.
The hippie-looking guy kind of looks like Kurt Cobain.
Oh.
Fetty Alvarez and company like Nine Inch Nails better. That's my thing.
So be here all week, ladies and gentlemen. Try the veal.
I got another one before we try the veal. Could this be the true life story of how Ray Charles got off heroin?
I want to go back to something Patrick said. Through the whole movie, in my mind, I kept calling that guy Jesus.
Yeah.
Because he looked like Jesus.
Yeah.
When the nail gun showed up,
yeah.
And he does get shot in the hand.
Several times.
But why is he wearing wire-rimmed glasses from the 70s?
He seems to be the only character who is from the 70s. And
in the cinematography, it's from the 70s, too.
He reminded me so much.
From the remake of Texas Chainsaw.
He reminded me so much of the stoner in Cabin in the Woods. That was his...
And he reads from the book for no good reason, then, because we need to move this thing along.
He reads from the book because there's nothing to do in that cabin except for read the book.
Trivial Pursuit.
Board games.
Board games.
I want to talk, too, about that last sort of half hour that, for some reason, Shiloh Fernandez, the worst lead in a movie maybe I've ever seen. He's so goddamn bad, and he's allowed to basically be the hero of the movie. Not the survivor, but he is basically the hero. He never gets possessed. He can't burn his sister alive, but he can definitely fucking bury her. I just don't understand how we get to... He buries her alive, and then she's cured.
Well, I wanted to talk about that, because she's cured magically. This is the most perverse example of foreshadowing I've ever seen in my life.
We're going to get to that.
Because in the first 15 minutes...
That garage in Chicago?
Yes. Yeah. I wanted to go back to see the family, but I had gotten that job. And as we all know, in the 21st century, once you get a job, you got to hang on to it like grim death.
As an auto mechanic. It's not like I got hired at a law firm.
It's like something out of an Elvis movie. Well, now I'm an auto mechanic.
His mom went crazy and died. His sister is a drug addict who OD'd. And die.
Can I talk about
the OD? He's never come back because he got a job at a garage.
I just want to finish this. The only possible reason for the garage thing is that at the end, we're expected to believe that with a car battery and two hypodermic needles, he's going to defibrillate his sister.
Yeah. That works.
Yeah.
That's a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Only if she's possessed.
Never,
and Jewish.
Never try it on me. What were you going to say?
I was going to say about the OD thing, there was a line that I laughed really hard at the beginning because, all right, they're staging this intervention for Mia and she's, you know, on heroin and everybody knows that she's been on heroin for a really long time. But the brother is behind staging this new intervention because her friends have done this for her before and it didn't work. But he's just like, no, this will work this time because I'm here.
Because I didn't bring any board games.
I brought
my girlfriend.
And then they go, you know she OD'd, right? And he's like, what? Don't you think your fucking brother would know that she overdosed at some point in time?
And yet he reacted to the news in the same way he reacts to everything in this movie.
This is my girlfriend. My sister OD.
Including being shot with a nail gun.
Yeah.
The other thing I was thinking, and I don't have much experience with heroin.
Don't throw it down a well.
Yeah. Maybe that's what caused all the problems. At the beginning of the film, she swears off heroin. I'm assuming it's supposed to be heroin. I don't know. And that baggie she empties into the well is pretty big. That seems to me...
It's never identified as heroin.
The kids call it a score.
From my limited experience seeing heroin in movies, that's a lot of heroin.
Yeah.
If you had sold that on the street...
Yeah.
She could have had 2 weeks in a real rehab with no ghosts. This would be a perfect advertising opportunity for one of these rehab places. Rehab with no dead people.
And no spoons.
The movie
good luck.
Structurally, is such a mess, too. Because...
Does it have axe?
It kind of does.
There's several fades to black, which I found interesting.
So Act 1 is basically everything that leads up to tree rape. Act 2 should theoretically end when the brother burns the cabin.
Yeah.
The third act should be where shit goes crazy, where all the friends come back from the dead, and Mia has to fight all of it. If we want to turn her into the hero of the movie as this crazy twist, because she was the demon for the whole movie...
Yeah, why doesn't the nurse come back?
Now she's the hero. We need to give her something to fight. Not just one lady who climbs out of the ground, drops a car on her, and then gets cut in half. End of movie. The third act is rushed and nonsensical in a way that's problematic.
The nurse doesn't come back because the film is clearly teaching us that dispatching the evil dead with a broken piece of toilet works.
Yeah.
She didn't need a chainsaw. She just needed another toilet.
Yeah, and at one point, one of the characters is appalled at the notion of killing someone. But this is after they've already bashed in the one girl's head with it. I'm like, we're not going to kill people. You mean like I just did 5 minutes ago? Mm-hmm. Let's also talk about the post-credits tag.
I'm glad you brought that up. Oh, boy.
If you sit through all the credits, for no good reason, Bruce Campbell's face shows up and he says, groovy. Again, either to remind you that there's another series of movies that you liked that are better, to tell you that Bruce Campbell has sold out completely. It's his stamp of approval on the movie. It hints that Ash approves of everything that just happened and finds it to be groovy. It's not setting up a sequel. It's not a teaser. It's literally just...
It's just his head saying, and he turns and he says, groovy. And I was joking with Patrick before we started. It could have been for Man of Steel. It could have been for The Internship. You have no idea.
Anything that's groovy. What it shows is that Bruce Campbell likes a paycheck.
Yeah, it was depressing.
Yeah. There was a lot of trailers before the movie for other horror movies that looked better. I think it's the coming attractions conundrum a little bit.
But also, like, bleak.
Yeah.
The world is a dark place. I don't know.
I'm waiting for some happy film.
Yeah.
If you want to feel worse, I read on Wikipedia that this is the Evil Dead remake is going to get a sequel, and that
How can they know that already when the first one hasn't come out or made money? They announced it at
South by Southwest.
The movie hasn't opened yet. See if people like it or pay money to see it. Why are we doing this now?
And then Sam Raimi and Bruce Campbell are doing Army of Darkness 2.
Good. Yes.
And then there's talk that they're going to do a crossover of Mia and Ash. Mia from the Evil Dead remake with Ash from Army of Darkness. Yeah. And I say, why not just cut to that right now?
The world wants that, though. Again, there were, let's say, 1,000 ideas in the beginning. We've done all 1,000, so now we're just going to do remakes and variations and sequels and reboots and prequels and team-ups, and mash-ups, and we're out of new ideas, everybody. This is it.
Man, 1991 was good.
Right?
The whole thing makes me feel very old. So, rush right out and see The Evil Dead remake. It's a hell of a time. It's a night out of your best entertainment dollar.
Your hands will thank you.
Stay home and weigh your heroin.
Thank you for listening, everybody. Thank you to Roger Ebert. See you next week.
Next time we'll be back with a movie we like.
Ta-da!